You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 8th of September. I'm Simon Brown, coming to you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, we chat to Chantal Marks, AVR results, Spur plunging, Hammerson plunging. Davi Root, help us understand what quarter-on-quarter seasonally adjusted annualized GDP actually means. And then Hayden Geiger from FNB Securities-Backed Lending, helping us understand what that is and how we could use it. The show proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Mount Grace is reopening as are more Soho Sun hotels. Business Day, Reserve Bank's Chris Lovolt sees room to ease rates further. Morning markets, the US was closed yesterday for Labor Day, so nothing happening there. Asia, green, Sydney up 0.8% and Tokyo up 0.6%. Commodities, a little bit of red. Pretty much across the board, gold $1,930 an ounce, rand 1674 against the US dollar, and top 40 calling a green open of about 0.2% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Chantal Marks. She's head research at FNB Wealth and Investments. Chantal, morning. Appreciate your time this morning. AVI results. AVI, for me personally, has always been my preferred food producer. And they really came out with it yesterday. I mean, they had some issues. Obviously, some of their shoes were struggling. ING not doing great. Snacks doing great. And overall, solid results. Dividend being paid. And they're looking for acquisitions.
Yes, I absolutely think that the quality of a company and a management team comes out during times of, let's call it unfavorable times, rather. Mm-hmm. And this happened for AVI as well. So their portfolio is so well diversified that even though some of their apparel and shoe businesses weren't operating during lockdown and I&J weren't processing anything or fishing for that matter, Snackworks, which is Baker's Biscuits, really comforted, I think, a lot of people during lockdown. And Entice, which is has a coffee and tea portfolio, including Coffee Ace and Five Roses, mm-hmm. would have also done quite well during lockdown because a lot of people were sitting at home in the middle of the winter. And what else do you do but have a hot drink? So that resilience really came up in their revenue number. But what shows the quality of the management team is the fact that they were able to only see a very small contraction in the gross profit margin and also in the operating margin. They were able to maintain costs very well. And that meant that their cash flows were still positive and strongly so, which in turn meant that their debt was under control. And that allowed them to also pay a dividend and even and pay a dividend in line with last year. They didn't even have to cut it.
Yeah, I take your point. You know, in the good times, anyone can be a manager. It's the tough times when management really comes through. And talking of management, I mean, Spur now has four executives leaving. The CEO that was announced, 6 or so weeks ago, COO suddenly gone, two more non-execs. The price had been holding, it'd been slipping. But yesterday, massive sell-off, 13% down. No news. I imagine it was just a shareholder saying thanks, but no thanks. Is there opportunity here? Should shareholders be concerned?
Yeah, I remember there was a pair trade put forward by someone, but I'm not sure exactly who, but that might have triggered a bit of selling pressure on Spur because of all these management exodus. The pair trade that was suggested was long Famous Brands, short Spur. So you'd buy Famous Brands and sell Spur and mm-hmm. then you'd make a profit. I'm not sure if this has something to do with that, because with the management changes, it seems quite terrible on the face of it, but you're speaking to the least cynical person in the world right now. If you actually look at the reasoning behind why these executives and board members are leaving, it makes absolute sense. So from my perspective, I think there's probably opportunity in Spur right now, but we are in a very difficult environment, so perhaps food isn't exactly where you should be putting your money right now for the time being.
Yeah, I think it was Anthony Clark who did that, Investors Monthly, long famous brands, short Spur. Another stock under massive pressure, Hammerson. I mean, that is because the rights issues started trading yesterday. So stock goes X, right, prices go down in this case. 88%, but it is a massive rights issue. Would you, if as a holder, would you be taking up those rights, or have you completely just avoided Hammerson and the meltdown?
Yeah, I mean, so I've been very happy to avoid Hammerson and the meltdown. But if you are a shareholder and you have actually received those nil-paid letters or rights, you have to either sell it or you have to take it up. You cannot let it lapse, and I cannot stress that enough. Because if you actually look at the value that you have in your portfolio right now, it totals, I think, I've got 65 Rand 93, because you have 24 rights at 2 Rand 45 each and a share worth 7 Rand 13. If you let those rights lapse, you have a share of 7 Rand 13, and you would have lost out quite substantially. It might not seem that bad relative to the 12 Rand that the share was trading at 2 weeks ago. But remember, you also had a 5-for-1 share consolidation. It's all very complicated. But the most important thing just to remember is do something with those rights. Don't let them lapse. I would probably sell them right now.
I would probably, truthfully, I probably would have sold ahead of this all happening. But if you do sell the rights, I mean, you're going to be diluted essentially out of existence. I mean, your slice of the company which you used to hold is going to be just reduced to a minuscule amount.
Yeah, it is going to be very small, but I mean, it's for a retail investor, it's not that important. If I can be completely blunt, because you would have cashed in on the rights that you would have sold, so you can do something else with it. Yeah. And then you have this holding left, and I mean, you don't really want to influence the boardroom, right? So it doesn't really matter how big your shareholding is relative to the total shares in the company.
I hear you. No one's inviting me to the boardroom. My vote is tiny. It doesn't really count there. But as Chantal says, either exercise or sell. Do not let them just sit and lapse, because they will, and that will cost you money. Chantal Marks, Head Research, FNB Wealth and Investments, appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Davi Rutte, he's an economist at the Efficient Group. Davi, morning, appreciate your time. I was trying to rack my brain. It was years ago, maybe as much as 7 or 8 years ago, presentation at the JSC where you explained the quarter-on-quarter seasonally adjusted annualized GDP in sort of layman terms. And I thought to myself, we got GDP coming out later today. It is going to be an absolute horror number. All that matters is, you know, how much of a horror. We know it's going to be a horror. I thought, let's try and understand what this Q-on-Q seasonally adjusted annualized means. I suppose first point, quarter on quarter, we're looking at the second quarter here. Are we looking back to the first quarter of 2020, or do we reference second quarter of 2019?
Yeah, well, it depends how I want to look at it. Hello to you. It's really nice talking to you. It's ages ago, Jay-Z. Usually what economists do, we compare the most recent quarter, in this case the second quarter, to the first quarter of this year. You can compare the second quarter to the second quarter of last year, but usually what we do, we compare it to the first quarter of this year. But there are so many adjustments that one need to make. Maybe the easiest way to explain this is to, let's assume that we only produce maize. We only produce 100 bags of maize, and last year we produced 100 bags of maize, and this year we produced 102 bags of maize. Then it's easy to calculate that the GDP in this instance increased by 2%. But the problem is that we measure things in rands, and of course there are seasonalities, because we harvest the maize only in one certain quarter, in the second quarter. As an example, you don't harvest maize in the first or in the fourth quarter. So it's a little bit unfair to compare the harvest quarter to the non-harvest quarters. So we have to make an adjustment, and we call that adjustment, we call that the seasonal adjustment. Then, of course, because we're only looking at one specific quarter, in this case it will be the second quarter, and in order to figure out what the economy is going to do, if the economy keeps on performing like it did in the second quarter, we express that on an annual basis. Now, I hope all of this makes sense. So the first adjustment that you can make is for inflation. We call that the real adjustment. The second quarter, the second adjustment that you now have to make is to adjust for seasonality. And then you compare it to the first quarter, and then you express that on an annual basis. So in this, if you do all these calculations, then I expect the economy to contract by a significant amount in the second quarter. My number is roughly about 50% contraction in the second quarter. But that also means that the third quarter is probably going to look a little bit better.
Yeah.
Because the third quarter will be compared to the second quarter. And because the second quarter was such a horrible quarter, the third quarter is likely to be much better, probably around about 20% growth or so. If you put all of that together, I expect the economy to contract by approximately 10% or so for this year. So it's a little bit complicated, but if you think through that, it's actually quite easy to understand.
Yeah, okay, so and that makes sense to me. And I take your point where, you know, Q2 going to be a horror, Q3 will bounce back, and then we need to sort of zoom out and say, okay, you know, Q3 was the base effect because we were comparing it to the hard lockdown quarter.
Yes.
And we need to say, what is our annualized, you know, for the year 2020 going to be? And at 10% down, I mean, GDP is kind of like, I liked your maize example. It means we went from 100 bags of maize, we went suddenly down to 90 bags of maize over the year, and that, I mean, that is a giant number.
That is a horrible number. And remember, it's not only, of course, everybody will be affected. You're going to lose, many people will be losing their jobs. You're going to take a pay cut or whatever the case might be. But remember the GDP number, this number that we've calculated, this 90 or 100 bags of maize.
Mm-hmm.
We use that to calculate many other things as well. For instance, we use that to express state debt as a percentage of GDP. When this number gets smaller, then this ratio moves in the wrong direction. Another very important number is a fiscal deficit. That's how much the state borrows every year. And in this year, if their GDP contracts by 10% as I expect, the state is probably going to borrow approximately 16% of GDP only in one single year. And the state's debt number, relative to the size of the economy or relative to GDP, is likely to exceed 80% or maybe even as much as 84% of GDP. So the GDP number is probably the single most important number in the economy. And what one can do, you can take this GDP number and you can divide it amongst all the people in the country. And then you calculate a per capita GDP.
Yeah.
And if you compare South Africa's per capita GDP today, then the last time we were here, I've calculated for 2020, because of this 10% expected contraction, it will be the same as where we were last in 1981, in terms of per capita GDP. In the past 5 years, in fact, per capita GDP has been falling every year. So this is a crisis in which we are in at the moment, without a doubt, but we were in a crisis before the lockdown. So we have to understand that. That's very important.
Yeah, that's a great point. We came into this in a recession, but 1981, I wasn't even at big school. I was at, what do they call it? Senior primary. I wasn't even yet at high school. Dovi Root, really appreciate that. That makes a lot of things click. I love the point. GDP goes down 10%. Suddenly a whole bunch of other ratios look worse because of our debt, because of our deficit, etc. Dovi Root, Economist Efficient Group, thanks very much for your time this morning. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness, and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Hayden Geiger. He's Head Growth F&B Private Bank Lending. Hayden, appreciate your time this morning. Securities-backed lending, a service that's obviously coming out of your department. Essentially, this is a loan which I can take out, which I then secure that loan with shares that I have, either local or offshore shares, even unit trusts, and essentially free up cash flow without having to exit my equity holdings.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me. That's 100% correct. It's a fantastic product in that it really allows you to create liquidity without liquidating your portfolio. And it helps you to stay in the market to create those longer-term gains. And also it allows you to leverage those assets without potentially triggering the tax event.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, there's a couple of benefits by not having to exit the market. One is there's no tax implication. I'm obviously still going to receive those dividends along the time. And of course, I take any gains or losses as those shares do. But it gives me that cash flow. And that cash flow lets me go. And I mean, I suppose I could leverage myself a bit and go and buy more equity. And essentially, I start getting a bit of a gearing effect.
That's exactly what our clients have been doing. So what we've noticed is a bit of a trend is that they've used their portfolios to create those gearing effects. But over and above that, they've also used them to actually purchase real estate. The diversification of portfolios is also actually quite a big thing. People are looking to take some funds offshore. They're using them also for tuition fees. It really just is a great quick way to create liquidity in the balance sheet.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I'd thought of just buying equity, but in truth, I could buy a property. I could just use it to diversify. I could, you know, if I got expensive debt out there, I could pay that down and use it for that. Is the term? I mean, this is in essence, it's a loan. Securities, your shares are backing the loan. Is there a term payoff, or is it a case of that loan sits there, and as long as you've got the security, you're happy? And the client can elect, you know, as and when their cash flow works, to repay it.
So, Simon, what actually happens is on these facilities, they generally run for terms of 3 to 5 years. But we do have two options that we put into the market. The first one is an interest-only payment, whereby the client will only pay their interest over the period of the term. And the other one is where we actually have interest roll-up. So the interest capitalizes on a monthly basis. As long as you stay within your facility size that we give, and that actually helps clients manage their cash flow far better.
Yeah, I get that. I like that. And last point, I mean, in essence, if I come with X amount of equity, you will lend a certain percentage against it. And it's going to depend, you know, what those shares are. You know, my big blue chips versus perhaps a small, you know, junior exploration mining company, the latter might generate less than the former.
Absolutely. You take a look at your portfolio that you have or the equities that you have. We run it through a lending risk model. Mm-hmm. And we give you an amount that's called a lending percentage against the portfolio that we are happy to lend against.
Yeah, I like this. I remember sort of pre the National Credit Act, a lot of brokers were doing this. It then seemed to disappear. Securities-backed lending, essentially using shares, local offshore shares, unit trusts as security for a loan, which you can then go and gear the portfolio, pay off debt, perhaps move into a different asset class. Hayden Geiger, Head Growth F&B Private Bank Lending, really appreciate the time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the MoneyWeb app. Podcast and every morning from 7 a.m. again on the website or the app or wherever good podcasts are aggregated. Chat to us on the social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. Use the hashtag MoneyWebNow. This show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact. Protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.